Welcome to Gay Geek Bizarre Show, Episode 7. And it's a Monday, June 13th, 2016. I am Nard.
And I am Ray.
And we have a show today dedicated to the tragedy that happened in Orlando at Pulse Bar. It was a tragedy that many people are affected, even our friends and our families. And we extend our condolences to the family and friends of the victims. So,
getting on Facebook the last 2 days and watching the news has been very hard for me. But today somebody, a friend of mine, posted this, and I thought it rang true with a lot of what has been going on. And it's by Tennessee Williams. The world is violent and mercurial. It will have its way with you. We are saved only by love. Love for each other and the love that we pour into the art we feel compelled to share. Being a parent, being a writer, being a painter, being a friend. We live in a perpetually burning building. And what we must say from it all the time is love. And that's a quote by Tennessee Williams.
Yes. So I was at the Saturday night.
Well, we both were.
We were out, right? We were
out at Discovery Green.
We were at Discovery Green. We were just watching a concert with Taylor Dane,
which is a Pride celebration, part of the Pride celebration here in Houston. Mm-hmm. And looking back, what happened in Orlando could have been us.
Yes.
I mean, somebody could have walked up with a semi-automatic machine gun and started firing into the crowd. And
this is Texas, and that can happen.
Yeah.
Really. So I got messages. My Facebook feed is already was being, you know, it's being bombarded with messages. And Even my friend from work was telling me, asking me what's happening. And then I had to give him an update of what I know so far. And then Sunday, when everything was, everybody was still scrambling on what's happening. And I had the softball game and I met a couple of friends. And I was even checking up on Facebook with a couple of friends from who were in Florida, but they are in Fort Lauderdale. So I guess they're safe there. And then I have a friend who Kramer. Yeah, shout out Kramer. He was going through his text messages because he's messaging people who are from Orlando and waiting for everyone to check in to say that they're safe, because if there are 59 people, I heard about 59 people and about more than 50 people injured, it's a large chance that somebody we know and somebody we know from that city, because, Orlando is a big city and we do have friends who go there. Who knows? I could have been there. I could have been visiting my sister who lives in Orlando, and I could have been in that in the Pulse Bar, because, just people who just want to have a night out to celebrate or, to be themselves.
Well, true. And for the straight listeners, it's for y'all that are not gay. One of the things that has always been a sanctuary for gay people or has been the gay bars. I mean, we can be catty and nasty to each other as we want to be. But when you're in a gay bar, you never, ever felt like anything was going to, I've never felt like anything bad was going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. I felt safe holding hands with somebody. I felt safe kissing somebody on the lips. Which I've never felt outside of a gay bar, really. And I still have issues today with public displays of affection. When I'm with a partner or somebody I'm dating or something like that. So I think the reason this has struck home hard with a lot of us is because most people went to that bar that night to party and have a good time and never would thought about something like this happening. I mean, this was probably the farthest thing from any mind. But just like those people that went to a church meeting in Charleston last year and a gunman walked in and opened fire, it wasn't expected. And we're all reeling from this about and our feelings. And there are a bunch of them. I've been mad. I've been sad. I've been hurt. But a friend of mine asked me today, he said, God, I feel like I need to do something. And my thought was, well, what do you do when tragedy like this strikes? But I guess the biggest thing that I've come to conclusion by the end of the day that we can do to change, to make things better for everybody, is the one thing that everybody over the age of 18 in the U.S. can do, and that is vote. Because gun laws aren't going to change unless we vote the right people in. Attitudes and laws aren't going to change. And I've noticed that a lot of the people that do a lot of LGBT hate speech throughout the year are all on love and prayers right now in their Twitter feeds and everything. And you know what? Like a lot of other gay people, I really don't care about your love and prayers. I want you to do the right thing because you're an elected official in office. But that's not happening. So I think the biggest thing that all of us can do is that you can do on a personal level is go register and vote and change the people that are elected officials that make the laws, that make sure stuff like this doesn't happen, that people can't get access to automatic military assault rifles. And for you that want to sit there and say, well, that's my constitutional right. Well, you know what? If you want to hunt, if you can't kill something with a bow and arrow or a musket gun, then you're not much of a hunter to start with. So if you need a semi-automatic weapon to kill something, you shouldn't be out hunting in the first place. So things like this can't happen. So kids can't walk into high school and start shooting up their schoolmates. So middle school kids aren't dying in their classrooms and teachers dying to try to protect them. So people can go out to a bar and dance and party, regardless of whether it's a gay and lesbian establishment or a regular establishment, and not have to fear about some person with a mental illness or prejudice or something walking in and killing them. It is unacceptable, and I think the biggest way to make change is with votes, because that's the only way things are going to change is when our voice is heard at the government level, on a national level.
Yeah. That is something I have to talk to my sister about too. Okay, I should say that my sister is actually a Republican or very conservative, and she was able to see how it is last night because she lives in Florida. She was able to see how it was the victims going into the hospital, left and right, being bombarded with patients. Either they're dead or dying. She was able to see them last night. And I talked to my sister about it. This is what we have to handle. The gay people have to suffer because of people like this who are homophobic. I want my sister to know that voting the right way and thinking that people like me, people like Ray, deserve the right of life and happiness. And the gunman that night really destroyed it, you know, a lot of lives. And I don't know to what extent my sister knows about it or what she feels about it. But to me, it's really born of hate. It was something that, because of hate, people died. And we just can't have that. And people who are conservative and who are against gay people, or yeah, this is what happens. At least 59 or 60 people, I don't know, 59 people died. That's what I have to say about it.
And I'd also like everybody to take a step back and look at this as not a ISIS terrorist attack. Because, yes, allegedly this guy was associated with ISIS. But ISIS wasn't involved at Columbine. It wasn't involved at Sandy Hook. It wasn't involved in Oklahoma City. In regards to this guy's beliefs, he chose to do this because he had an issue with gay people. So, now with that said, this is not the first history of violence at LGBTQ bars and clubs in America. And this article is by Mark Joseph Stern, and it comes from The Slate. The mass shooting at Orlando's LGB nightclub Pulse, which left at least 50 dead, is only the latest chapter in a long history of violence at LGBTQ bars and clubs in America. In fact, for as long as LGBT people have been congregating in their own social spaces, these spaces have been the target of vicious homophobic and transphobic violence. Until the Pulse massacre, the most notorious act of violence against a gay bar was the burning of the Upstairs Lounge, a New Orleans gay bar, in 1973. An arsonist set fire to the bar, killing 32 people in less than 20 minutes. The vast majority of politicians declined to comment on the arson, and the Catholic Archbishop of New Orleans did not offer support to the victims. The Archdiocese apologized for its silence in 2013. Many news outlets ignored the story. Some of those that did cover it mocked the victims for being gay. No one has ever been prosecuted for the crime. When asked about identifying the victims, the chief detective of the New Orleans Police Department responded, "We don't even know these papers belong to the people we found them on. Some thieves hung out there. And you know, this was a queer bar." In 1997, Olympic Park bomber Eric Robert Rudolph bombed the Other Side Lounge, a lesbian nightclub in Atlanta, later explaining that he believed the concerted effort to legitimize the practice of homosexuality was an assault upon the integrity of American society. He described homosexuality as an aberrant sexual behavior and wrote that when the attempt is made to recognize this behavior as being just and legitimate and normal as the natural man-woman relationship, every effort should be made, including force if necessary, to halt this effort. In his confession, Rudolph railed against the homosexual agenda, including gay marriage, homosexual adoption, hate crime laws, including gays, or the attempt to introduce a homosexual normalizing curriculum into schools. 3 years later, Randall Gay opened fire on Backstreet Cafe, a gay bar in Roanoke, Virginia, killing Danny Overstreet, 43, and severely injuring 6 others. Gay was angry that his last name could mean homosexual and said that God had told him to kill gay people. He called himself a Christian soldier working for my Lord and testified in court he wished he could have killed more fags. More recently, in 2013, Musab Mohammed Mamari set fire to Neighbors, a gay nightclub in the Capitol Hill area of Seattle, on New Year's Eve. Ms. Mari has explained that he believed gay people should be exterminated. Of course, these attacks only punctuate the thousands of anti-LGBTQ hate crimes that occur in public, in schools, in bathrooms, in parks, on sidewalks, and often in broad daylight every year. Federal law did not explicitly criminalize anti-LGBTQ hate crimes until quite recently, as President George W. Bush had threatened to veto any legislation that outlawed the crimes on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. With President Barack Obama's support, the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act finally passed in 2009. It drew just 5 Republican votes in the Senate, and his fierce opponent, Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, criticized his colleagues for merely caving to the political cause of the movement.
So there's a big history, of course, in the past about... You know.
Yeah. So this is not the first time there's been violence at a gay club. And this article just showed some of the other ones that have happened over the years. So this is just one more to add to the list.
Yeah. Well, it is tragic. And I heard on Facebook that it's the highest death toll.
Ever.
Aside from 9/11. Yeah. Well, that's a lot, but then here,
yeah,
that's the highest ever. And
yeah, but this is a single person doing this.
Yes, so. That's right. And what's
In theory, it's a single person. There are stories that there was somebody holding doors shut at the club. Whether or not that's been proven or not, I don't know, because there's some whole thing going on, and I hadn't had a chance to sit down and watch what I could figure out about it, about somebody saying, some guy was telling the story about trying to get out of the club, and somebody was holding the fire door shut at the club. So I'm sure as time, I'm sure once all the bodies have been identified and the families have been notified, and everybody's been contacted and everybody's given statements, that other things will come to light with this. It's not going to all happen in one day. And I think the Orlando Police Department is under a lot of scrutiny right now. And I hope they do it by the books and make sure everything's documented and people that know anything turn in the evidence that they have. So,
okay.
One of the other things that happened with this, that really happened on Sunday, is that the ban on blood donation for gay men is still in effect. And as thousands turned out to donate blood on Sunday, a lot were turned away because they were gay, active, sexually gay men and women who, based on the blood ban, could not donate blood.
That is horrible.
And the rule is, gay or bisexual men who have had sex with another man in the past 12 months are not allowed to donate blood, according to the official rules from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The ban has caused outrage among some in the gay community, who say they are being stopped from helping their LGBT brothers and sisters targeted in Sunday shooting in the Pulse nightclub. At the time this article was written, 49 people were killed when Omar Mateen turned an open fire in the gay bar, and at least 53 more were wounded in the worst mass shooting in the U.S. history. It's the mass shooting, not bombing. So, after the attack, the One Blood Donation Center immediately put out an urgent call for donors to help hospitals deal with the massive influx of injured people. The center's website crashed from the online traffic, and more than 5,300 people donated blood throughout the One Blood statewide network on Sunday, a single-day record, according to Susan Forbes, One Blood's Vice President of Marketing and Communications. The response from the public has been huge. Sexually active gay and bisexual men are still barred from donating. Origins of the ban. The FDA implemented a near-lifetime ban on blood donations from gay and bisexual men in 1985 at the start of the AIDS epidemic, when little was known about the spread of the disease. Since the ban was introduced, screening technologies have vastly improved, and the FDA updated its guidance on the issue in 2015. Under the latest rules, gay and bisexual men may donate blood, provided it has been 12 months since their last sexual encounter with another man.
So I have to be celibate for 12 months to donate.
I guess even if you're in a married, committed relationship, monogamous relationship, you can't get blood. So, and to a certain extent, it's understandable, because HIV is still sometimes undetectable in the blood up until several weeks after transmission.
But don't they test it?
But they do test it. But still, it's takes time for it to turn up into the blood system. It can take weeks.
That's right. So if you're saying, because the way they detect it is using antibodies.
Antibodies. And so if they haven't formed yet, then it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. If you donate after being infected, if you donate, yeah, right, the day after, there's really no way to know.
So, I mean, but in theory, that ban should apply to everybody then, because just as many heterosexuals are HIV positive anymore as...
Yeah.
So... I mean, it's a situation that's hard to fight, because I understand the federal guidelines and what it means, and that gay men do provide more riskier sex scenarios. But I also know there are many straight people that provide as many risky sexual scenarios too. So, it's hard to say, but I know that that it needs to change somehow. There's got to be a way for it to work. So,
yeah. You know what? Just give me an idea. Because I don't know too many straight people. Just a few. Probably yeah. I'll ask. Is it okay to ask a straight friend, can you donate blood on my behalf?
I don't see why not.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of right now. Because if we're banned to donate blood, then we might have to ask our allies, the straight people who, you know, our families and friends who are straight,
mm-hmm.
ask them to donate blood for us on our behalf. I wish we could. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now here comes the really hard part. We have a list that had been released at noon today of the names of the people that have been released so far that died at Pulse Club. And I think we need to honor them. I think we have 35 so far that have been released.
I'll do it right.
Okay.
So Edward Sotomayor Jr., 34 years old. Juan Ramon Guerrero, 22. Luis S. Villema, 22. Stanley Almodovar III, 23. They're so young. Eric Ivan Ortiz Rivera, 36. Peter O. Gonzalez Cruz, 22. Kimberly Morris, 37. Eddie Jamoldroy, Justice, 30 years old. Luis Omar Ocasio Capo, 20. Anthony Luis Loriando Nodisla, 25. Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, 35, and his partner Luis Daniel Wilson Leon, 37. Amanda Alviar, 25. Mercedes Marisol Flores, 26. Martin Benitez Torres, 33. Frankie Jimmy De Jesus Velasquez, 50. There's an older crowd too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Xavier Emmanuel Cyrano Rosado, 35. Simon Adrian Carillo Fernandez, 31. Oscar A. Araxena Montero, 26. Enrique El Rios, Jr., 25. Javier Jorge Reyes, 40. Miguel Angel Honorato, 30. Gilberto Ramon Silva Menendez, 25. Corey James Connell, 21. Jason Benjamin Josephat, 19.
And so far, he's been the youngest.
He's the youngest, 19 years old.
So far, yeah.
Daryl Roman Burt II, 29. Dionka Deidre Drayton, 32. Alejandro Barrios Martinez, 21. Joel Ryan Paniagua, 32. Juan P. Rivera Velasquez, 37. Luis Daniel Conde, 39. Shane Evan Tomlinson, 33 years old. Juan Chavez Martinez, 25. Gerald Arthur Wright, 31. Leroy Valentin Fernandez, 25. And last for this, in this list is Tevin Eugene Crosby, 25.
And this list can be found on Facebook and most of the news media now, because they've been posting it and keeping it updated today as they have released names once the families have been notified and stuff. So,
and do us a favor, if you are on Facebook or on Twitter, please do post something. If you are on or in Orlando and you are in that vicinity, say something about it. Or maybe tell everyone that you are safe. We don't know. We don't know who the complete list. We don't know. And it's good to check in with your friends. Let them know that you are safe.
Yes, if you live in Orlando and haven't called your mama already this week, do it now.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, to end things up, we're going to wrap it up with kind of a happy note here. I felt bad because it was overshadowed last night, but the 70th Annual Tony Awards were on TV last night. Mm-hmm. to recognize achievements in Broadway productions during the 2015-2016 season. James Corden hosted.
Yes, kudos to James Corden for hosting. He was a really great host. There was some off-camera stuff that he did that was really awesome. He was singing A Whole New World with Jake Gyllenhaal and the guy from Will and Grace. I forgot his name. The gay one.
Oh, no, I can't remember. I got to record. I got to finish watching it tonight because we only got a good hour in before Game of Thrones started and Preacher. So I got to go back and finish
watching
it. Can't
even believe you watched the Tonys.
Okay. But some of the big winners. Well, apparently Hamilton was the big winner of the night. I think they had 16 nominations, which is the most ever for a musical. But it won Best Musical. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is also the director and wrote it and is starring in it.
Wow.
Did everything. And actually, before the Tony started, I watched 60 Minutes last night, and there was a whole piece on Hamilton about Miranda and the whole cast, and it was awesome. So, The Humans won Best Play. A View from the Bridge won Best Revival of a Play. The Color Purple, Best Revival of a Musical. Best Book of a Musical went to Lin-Manuel Miranda for Hamilton. Jessica Lange won Best Lead Actress in a Play for Long Day's Journey into Night.
How old is she? She's still playing still.
Well, you know, she was on
American Horror Story for a long time, and then now she's...
Mm-hmm. Reed Birney for Best Featured Actor in a Play for The Humans. David Diggs, Best Feature Actor in a Musical for Hamilton. Renee Elise Goldsberry, Best Featured Actress in a Musical for Hamilton. Cynthia Erivo, I think that's how you say her last name.
Erivo,
Best Lead Actress in a Musical for The Color Purple. Frank Langella, oh my God, he's still alive. Best Lead Actor in a Play, The Father.
He's the father, probably.
He's the father, yeah, or the grandfather. Jane Howdyshell, Best Featured Actress in a Play for The Humans. So unlike the Oscars, the Tonys was very ethnically diverse and age diverse because Jane was in her late 60s, early 70s, I think, doing this show. And then
Jessica Lange,
she's also older. Yes. Older. So it was very interesting. They said there was no whitewashing of the Tonys, unlike the Oscars. I think that was the comment that was made last night during the show by James. So anyway, it was awesome for all these things. I hope one day I can win the lottery so I can afford to go see Hamilton because the tickets are probably going. I think they said they're going for $1,000 a piece now.
Wow, really? Because of this?
Before this, you couldn't get tickets to it because it's like it. When it hit Broadway, it was already at full steam opening day. So,
oh wow,
must have been really that. Right now, you can't. It's booked out. You can't get to it. And I would love to go see it before Lin-Manuel Miranda leaves the cast this summer. So,
oh really? Yeah. She's just going to be directing. She'll have somebody else. Oh, it's a he.
It's a he. Yes. So hopefully he'll take a vacation and go write something else awesome. Maybe he'll pick up another historical book and do something with it. But he basically picked up a book about Hamilton while he was on vacation because he heard somebody talking about it and read it. And on that vacation, he started writing the musical.
Wow. So. See, it goes to show you don't know anything about many musicals. It's the first time I've heard about Hamilton since last night. The only time I heard about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It was very historical. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, well, this is a kind of a special episode, more of a tribute, like I said, about, you know, the tragedy in Orlando, and we just wanted to, you know, end in a high note right now on the Oscars, which is...
No, the Tonys.
The Tonys.
The Oscars were not a high note. Sorry. It was very whitewashed.
The Tonys. That's right. I keep making mistakes on this one because I kind of blocked off Tonys last night for myself. I just saw a few. Yeah. Clips of it, that's why. And we'll have a regular show next week, and we're going to be featuring my interview with Jim Stevenson. He was one of the actors, or he was one of the people who were featured on the documentary called I Am Santa Claus, which is it's a feature documentary on Netflix. If you can find it on Netflix right now, I'll put the links on the website for you guys to check out so you could watch it, and probably you have comments for him. And I haven't recorded a show last weekend, but like I said, because of scheduling, and we'll be airing that interview with him on the next episode of Gig Geek Bizarre. So if you want to contact us and give us your comments, and maybe check on if you're from Orlando, let us know if you're okay. Email us at show@gaygeekbizarre.com.
Or you can call and leave us a voice message at 281-947-2327. That's 281-947-2327. We'd appreciate your voicemails.
Yes. And we'll be able to play it in the show if you can. And subscribe via iTunes. And you can also find us on SoundCloud. And follow us on Facebook. And we have a Twitter also. We haven't been posting on Twitter, but we're there. We're at Gay Geek Bizarre. And on Facebook, we're facebook.com/GayGeekBizarre. And of course, go to the official website at GayGeekBizarre.com. Thank you for listening. And we will catch you on the next episode. See you next week.
Bye. Remember to register to vote. It can change everything.